Thanks for listening to The Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Tommy John. Oh, yeah. Love me some Tommy John. Summer is here. Tommy John's getting ready for Memorial Day. The 4th of July is coming up. We got the red, white, and blue underwear, including the U.S. flag print for men and for women. Comes in all the best-selling fabrics, including cool cotton with breathable, lightweight fabrics that keep you 2 to 3 times cooler, and they dry 4 to 5 times faster than regular cotton. They got a no wedgie guarantee, comfortable stay-put waistbands, and luxurious soft fabrics designed to move with you. I love these underpants, and you'll never go back, I'm telling you now. And now, through the end of May, Tommy John's donating 5% on select red, white, and blue styles to the Honor Foundation, supporting veterans transitioning to civilian life. Let's take care of these people. It's Tommy John, right, Dawson?
Go to TommyJohn.com/Adam now to save 20% on your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
Adam Carolla is unprepared this weekend at the Brea Improv with special guest Adam Ray.
This is a fun one. Delusional.
Delusional. I do feel like that's something that's going around more and more these days. Maybe it started with pets. In the past, animals were pretty much either beasts of burden or we ate them. Either you got to pull my fat ass up this canyon side or I'm going to eat you. Or both. When you run out of gas dragging my fat ass up the side of this hill, then I'll eat you.
4 shows this weekend, 2 on Friday, 2 on Saturday. Live comedy sets from Adam and Adam. And then find out just how unprepared Adam Carolla is. Brea Improv, Friday night and Saturday night. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
This half brought to you by Tommy John. TommyJohn.com/M. All right.
Well, the Democratic field of presidential hopefuls already includes 22 candidates, so what's one more? New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio officially announced his bid for the nomination. In a video released early Thursday, the 58-year-old said he talked about raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, paid sick leave, guaranteed health care, free pre-K. He also takes on Trump. This is a three-minute video. Here's just a minute from it.
This has never existed anywhere else in this country. Fully comprehensive, guaranteed health care.
My wife, Charlene, and I believe health care is a human right. It has to be available for all. It has to be affordable. And it has to include mental health services.
Everything
got a soundtrack
begins with
going.
Being healthy.
Cooks.
And there's no
changes.
Health without mental health.
Today we announce free, full day, high quality, pre-K.
People come up to Bill every day and thank him for making that possible. It makes a real difference in a child's life, makes a real difference in a family's life.
Wait for
it doesn't matter if you live in a city or a rural area, a big state, a small state, doesn't matter what your ethnicity is.
Bleak.
People in every part of this country feel stuck or even like they're going backwards. But the rich got richer.
I'm a New Yorker. I've known Trump's a bully for a long time. This is not news to me or anyone else here. And I know how to take him on.
Bully and free are like two of the big words I didn't think I'd be hearing that much as an adult.
There
other
are.
Adults
bully,
talking about, we're giving free stuff because we keep you away from the bullies with free stuff. You ward, the way you handle a bully, you hit him over the head with free.
No free bullies.
So let's say you're being bullied.
Yeah.
You pull out your free stuff and you hit the bully with the freeze.
All right, I got to write this
okay.
down.
Okay, well, just talk to dumb people about getting shit for free and warding off bullies.
Although,
what? How old are we? What year is this?
Yeah, but I'm thinking, obviously, this is an insanely oversaturated group of candidates, but Bill de Blasio, being a New Yorker and understanding, you know, Trump as a New Yorker and Trump as a realtor.
You've got to understand the enemy.
I'm just thinking, I think that's going to give him an edge, you know, New Yorker against New Yorker.
I don't think people like him.
I was going to sign off he cooks
but
or sings on the screen.
But there's free pre-K.
Yeah. Here's the whole thing. The woke and the free and all that kind of stuff. It's good. But
like
eventually
life.
You got to talk about we need some policy here other than free.
There's a couple of candidates that aren't going to make it onto the stage because, you know, they're doing it over two nights because there's so many. And only 20 are going to be invited. Now there's 23. So who's going to be the odd man out?
Well, that's... The best part is when they interview that person and they put their positive spin on there. Like, I'm not on the main stage, but I won't risk rolling an ankle walking down the steps on the way out.
Right.
You know, and they'll put their positive. We're still going
strong. I'll be live tweeting during the whole thing.
Yes, yes.
So these days, most of us shop online, but beware that discount you find really is probably too good to be true because a new study from the Better Business Bureau says that counterfeiting is becoming more frequent. Studies have found that one in four people have bought something online that turned out to be counterfeit. Many
counterfeit products.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, like Chinese
accessories,
stuff, junk golf cart, purses.
Exactly.
Ray-Bans for $19?
Exactly. This is mostly organized criminal operating rings out of China. They're the vast majority of the fraud. And it can be anything from shoes to sports team apparel, electronics, cosmetics, even medication. You can avoid becoming a victim by doing your research. Don't always believe the reviews that you see. Those can be easily faked when everything's 5 out of 5 and this is the best lipstick I've ever used. If you think you've purchased a counterfeit product, call your credit card company, call the retailer. This is very, very common.
The good news is whether you're buying a Rolex or Big Bertha driver, I don't think anyone's good enough to know if it's fake. You know what I mean? Like, you're not a good enough golfer to even use that golf club in the first place.
Yeah.
The fake version.
You don't know.
I got this Submariner. It's good for 80 fathoms of seawater. Like, okay.
How will you ever know?
You're wearing it by the pool at the Luxor. Like, what the fuck? How are you ever going to know?
Yeah.
I mean, why do you even deserve to know? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's that good.
I just mean, like, you never use the watch to what it could be.
No.
Within an inch, you know, like most guys who drive the Corvettes and they talk about the 0 to 60, they never go that fast in them or they never actually do it. Now, if you can't really tell a fake Rolex from a real one by just holding it, then the performance part is really almost a non-issue.
Good on them. Mm-hmm. It's the same active ingredient. I would just say that makeup and medication is probably something you shouldn't get a bargain for. Heavy metals in those. Who knows what they're stepped on with. So just be careful.
What the hell, China?
Yeah.
Come on. I used to mistake you people for Japanese people. No more. You've done worked your way out of that group.
You took that compliment away?
I did.
Oh.
I did. I now think of you differently.
Oh, okay.
And all this bootlegging. I don't like it.
No. How mm-hmm. dare they?
Mm-hmm.
So the nonprofit group that administers the SATs will assign an adversity score now to each student who takes the test.
No.
To reflect, this news story was everywhere this morning, to reflect their social and economic background. This is according to Wall Street Journal and CNN. So here's how it's going to work. The numbers will be calculated using 15 factors, including the crime rate and poverty levels of the student's high school and neighborhood. Colleges will be able to see the score when considering the applicant, but the student will never see the score. So according to the journal, 50 colleagues used this adversity score as a beta test last year, but they want to expand it to 150 schools this fall. So you won't know what your score is, but it's going to be weighed into whether or not you get in or not.
I don't know if you have the whole breakdown of what, you know, what you could get points for, deductions for, whatever it is, school and crime and poverty. But I think there's one up there for coming from a single parent.
Well, I can
which
see that.
Is on the list. So Max Pata can look that up. But if we're going to go ahead and put that on the list of things that would hurt your child's performance, then maybe we should address single parents as a problem.
Or just give the bump.
Right.
Because that's something that we talk about a lot, moving that goalpost.
Yes, I'd like to explain all you bumpers out there. If you have a child of a single parent and that child does not have a father in the house, and discipline thus becomes an issue in that young man, and you've decided that that young man is being disciplined too greatly, or certain groups who have a higher likelihood of a single mom and not a dad to provide the guidance and the discipline in the home are then acting out at school, your thing of fixing the problem by eliminating suspension and expulsions is probably not going to actually fix
right.
the problem. So you going, well, you have these kids and there's a single mom and the mom has to work two jobs and so they can't do homework yeah. and they doesn't lacks the discipline or the fight, whatever that is. You giving him a couple of bonus points so he can get into, or she can get into college, may get them into college. It does not fix what the root of the problem is, dickheads. Or if you'd like to, then you'd have to have that discussion. So if you are going to put comes from single parent or broken family, if that makes your list, then you guys have addressed it as a problem. And if you've addressed it as a problem, then I think we should be able to talk about it. What are those things, Max Pata? Do you have them?
I'm still getting the exact ones. They're like in different like categories, like crime rates, neighborhoods, things like that. I'm trying to get the exact ones. So just give me a few more.
All right. Let me hit Castrol Edge. Stronger under pressure. Engines lose up to 10% of performance from friction. Castrol Edge. Fluid titanium transforms under pressure. Three times, fool. Stronger against viscosity breakdown than leading full synthetics. All right, you find that, Max Pata. We'll do one more. So.
Well, Lamar Odom claims he's a sex addict who betted more than 2,000 women.
Mm.
The former NBA star makes the admission in his upcoming memoir, Darkness to Light. He writes that he's been obsessed with sex for as long as he can remember, and he says there were too many strippers to count and that he often paid them. He also admits to cheating on Khloe Kardashian throughout the marriage.
To be fair, being only able to count to 13 does limit you when it comes to tallying up the strippers.
Oh, right.
Lamar's not the sharpest guy out there.
Mm-hmm. He had a ghostwriter to come up with the 2,000. His addiction caught up with him in that Nevada brothel in 2015 when he overdosed during a coke and booze fueled sex romp. And
this book
is coming out soon.
I remember Lamar Odom's dad, I think it was. He was the guy who wore the
outfit.
Yes.
Super snappy,
yes.
Short shanty mm-hmm. top, whatever.
That was a sweet combo.
I'm going to do a coffee table book. Let's see. We got What Black People Think White People Talk About.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do a book called Things White People Can't Wear. And I might have Lamar Odom's dad's ensemble on the cover.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you see like the black lady politician from Florida with like the turkoise cowboy hat. Like
sure.
That kind of
that's
stuff.
That's not for white folk.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like there's just stuff.
It wouldn't translate.
just wouldn't work. It's just
knee-length t-shirts.
It's somehow the
look like Ebenezer
top that this look. I'll make an exception for denim, but anything outside of denim, the top bottom pant, shorts with the jacket kind of suit. I've never seen a white guy really pull that one off. All right, Max Pad, did you find anything?
They haven't revealed the exact metrics yet, so they're
maybe
nothing
part
about
of it.
Families. Or single family, single moms,
single parent households. Yes, there is that.
I'm asking, is that on the list?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's what I was asking.
Okay.
It's on the list of
the 15 factors.
The 15 factors.
Yeah, along with like crime rates, poverty levels, things like that.
Okay, so we should work on all those things. What are they? Do you have them all?
That's what I'm saying. They haven't revealed exactly what they are yet. They just said that every news headline, there are 15 factors, including, and then they're using the same.
Oh,
that's
they
what
don't,
I found.
They don't give you the 15.
Right.
They just go including. Well, what are they including?
Poverty rates, crime levels, single parent households, neighborhoods,
and school.
Yeah,
like high school.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get that on your list, Gina Grad. The parent, is that on your list?
No, that what Chris said. They're not. I got the exact same information. It's crime levels and high school you came from and all over general neighborhood. But I couldn't find the 15 either. Is that what your question? Is that the question?
No, the parents.
Oh yeah, that wasn't on my list. Sorry,
but it's on your list.
Yeah, well, not everybody's reporting it. Yeah,
oh, where did you find that? Because I was on the
Business Insider.
I had Fox, Wall Street Journal, and CNN. This
yeah,
is
all
the
major
whole story.
News aren't doing it.
They're not doing parents.
No, they don't say that.
That's interesting.
All right, but anyway, I don't need the number. I just want to know if parents are on there. Pissing me off. Let's talk about parents. Parents are basically, like we were talking about sleep earlier, they just affect everything in a super good way or super negative way. Yeah. So just like you should work on your sleep, we should work as a society.
Your quality of sleep.
Sleep, quality of parents.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
All the rise, all the stuff we talk about, including the crime and the bad schools and the whatever. My kid's school is good because everyone has good parents and the school is good. The fucking box that they go to is the same as any other box any other kids go to. It's a box with a fence around it. It's a fucking box with a fence around it and a bike rack and a basketball court. It's the same as every other goddamn school. The difference between the good versions of that and the bad versions of that is I live in a neighborhood with a bunch of intact families and good mamas and good daddies who take care of their kids, and then their kids don't do a lot of punching other kids. They don't do a lot of littering. They don't do a lot of all the stuff you don't want kids to do at school, bullying other kids and all that kind of stuff. My son's friends don't get beat on by their dads. They have good dads. They have relationships with their dads. They don't have their dads. They don't live in fucking Florida and never see them. Thus, my son's friends are well-mannered, and they treat each other nicely, and they treat adults nicely, and they treat their classmates and strangers nicely because they have intact families. The school itself is a bunch of fucking stucco with a flat roof and a fence. So what can we get the fuck over what the school is? We need more money. He has a shitty desk and a fucking library and a basketball court. He has the same shit I had. He has the same shit everybody has. And yes, eventually you'll start getting better teachers to those schools because they don't want to get stabbed in the neck with a fucking number two pencil. So they'll end up over there. But there's still a bunch of people that are willing to work for $47,000 a year and have tapped out of private industry and they're not betting on themselves. Fine. And they have the same stupid ideas that my teachers had. It's the kids, but it's the parents. The parents are what create the kids, and then the schools have to teach and tame the kids.
Also, by virtue of being good parents, they're involved in the school, fundraising or helping out or whatever.
Yes. The school, you could give the school more money. It's not going to hurt, but fundamentally what you're dealing with here is a population of kids that were traumatized at the bad schools because of their fucking broken families, and kids that aren't traumatized and how they interact, how trauma survivors interact with one another is very different, especially when you're 11 and you can't really control your impulses. Okay, do I have to think of everything or can somebody else fucking wade into this pool with me and start discussing it?
Do I hear a 24th candidate for president?
Yeah, de Blasio's going to get free lunches to all the traumatized kids so they can have enough energy to stab each other. Asshole. All right. Should we bring it home?
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
I got a one-on-one with Edward Zwick, who's an Oscar-winning filmmaker. Mm. This guy's done Glory, Legends of the Fall, Last Samurai, Shakespeare in Love. A lot of range.
Damn.
And, yes.
I think he produced Shakespeare in Love, but still being involved with that
Shakespeare.
Film.
Yeah. I don't know which ones he directed.
He directed Glory.
Produced.
He directed Last Samurai.
Yeah. Does he have a movie that's coming out where we're talking about that, Max Pana? Oh, Trial by Fire. Who's in that thing? Well, anyway, I pre-recorded this with him when he was in town or available or whatever, and then I said I'd sit on it until the movie came out. So we got that, and we'll do a one-on-one with a legendary filmmaker.
Right.
Edward Zwick, and you should check out Charlie Kirk and his podcast on Podcast One, and enjoy a legendary filmmaker, Edward Zwick.
Corolla Drinks presents Bands in the Sand, Saturday, June 1st, Sea Legs on the Beach at Bolsa Chica, featuring Led Zeppelica. The nation's top Zeppelin tribute band, In the Sand. A day of live music, blended Mangria cocktails, endless rant IPA and lager. Win prizes from JBL and Rode microphones. And try the guacamole that currently holds the world championship belt. Bands in the Sand. And poets. Saturday, June 1st, high noon. Bands in the Sand. VIP cabanas are available and all are welcome. For more information, follow at Corolla Drinks and visit adamcorolla.com.
Edward Zwick is with us, director, writer, Academy Award-winning producer. Trial by Fire is in theaters this Friday. That's May 17th, this Friday. Laura Dern stars in it. Jack O'Connell, good to see you, my friend.
Nice to see you.
Man, your body of work is insanely impressive and diverse. I mean, Glory, great film, Legends of the Fall, Last Samurai, about last night, which is about as far away from Glory as you can get in terms of a film, but a fun film. The Jack Reacher. You've been doing this for a while. Do you like the insane variety of films that you do?
Yeah, I've always wanted to stay a moving target and keep mixing it up, keep myself interested. I think that I was trained in the theater, in the regional theater, and you know, when I was a kid, it was David Mamet one night and Strindberg the next, and there's a certain kind of promiscuity that I like.
Is this an accurate statement as it pertains to you? Because people ask me all the time, well, you write books, you make documentaries, you do podcasts, you do stand-up, what's the best? And I go, whatever I didn't do last, you know, I want to always do the next thing, because if you're just doing docs or you're just writing books, it gets a little monotonous, or you're just making one kind of movie.
Yeah, it sounds very much like first world problems to say that you're bored, you know, doing work that you do, because obviously we're lucky to do any of it. But it's about really waking up in the morning really excited about what you're doing. And I find that when I'm directing, I really miss writing. And when I'm writing, I really want to get back on the stage and direct. And same thing is true if I've produced or whatever. It's just about, it's kind of an excuse to stay a student and to stay a little bit on edge and do things that you're a little bit afraid of and not be so secure.
How, and by the way, I don't know if I knew about Denzel Washington before Glory. I don't think I did. But if you'd like to meet Denzel Washington, go back in time and meet Denzel Washington. Glory's a really good way to do that.
You know, I had gotten to know him. We were doing a television show on the lot at CBS. It was 30-something, and he was doing St. Elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd met, and obviously I'd seen one film that he'd done. And we got to make Glory because the studio said, if you can get Matthew Broderick, who had been Ferris Bueller, we'll let you make the movie and then cast whoever else you want. And the irony is it was Morgan Freeman and Denzel and Andre Brower.
Yeah, you don't get much further apart from Ferris Bueller to Glory either. But, man, such a great film that if some of you haven't seen it in a while, it holds up because it's not like Cocktail or something where it's like an 80s whatever. And you're like, the music, weird hairstyles and Spud McKenzie and everything. This just is the Civil War.
That's right.
Don't let me put any words in your mouth, but I think the most satisfying part of life is the beginning, middle, end. So like the best thing I could hope for my 12-year-old kid is that one day he'll restore a car. And at one point it'll be a junky, rusty Hulk, and then he'll meticulously take it apart and send everything out to be sandblasted and powder coated and have to do a lot of improvisation and even do a lot of fabrication. And one day he's going to turn the key and start it up and go down the road. And that's the most, not only satisfying, but sort of important process, I think, in being a human. I feel that films are very much that way, because you sit there and you have an idea, and the road to get it from the idea to you're sitting down in this opening night with the people filing into the theater, there's so many things that can go wrong. It takes so much.
What's really interesting is that you have this feeling, and it's the feeling that you have in the hair of your arms, either when you first write it or you first read it, and you hope, once you've deconstructed it, and the analogy of a car is not a bad idea, once it's broken down to its discrete parts and everyone has to be somehow perfect and then joined together, and it lies there in pieces for so long, but you pray that what you end up with is this thing that you had seen ephemerally somewhere in the distance, that you could recapitulate that feeling for a whole bunch of people that you had already had.
Right.
And that only will happen if the vision that you have has a certain amount of integrity or authenticity. Because if it's cynical, or if it's due to the moment, or if it's somehow targeted, it'll never achieve that thing that you're talking about. But I also know that for me, one of the greatest pleasures I've ever had is having built a house with my hands. Because that plasticity, the fact that I live in it, the fact that it exists, has great meaning to me. And I think that's not dissimilar, because there's something that happens when you make a movie, though, that it is yours and it is perfect. It's perfect until, in fact, the rubber meets the road and you see what other people think and you give it to them and it becomes theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no longer just yours. So there's something bittersweet about that moment as well.
Did you physically build a house? Because now we're going to have to talk about carpentry.
Well, one of my closest friends is a brilliant carpenter. He was raised on a logging camp in New Brunswick, Maine, Canada, actually, and from a little kid. And I bought this little kit, this little North Carolina kit, log kit house, like Lincoln Logs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it began. It was about 800 feet. And over the years, I've been his grunt assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And it has metastasized into something like a real house. And that's been one of the great joys.
I've always built and was a carpenter and a contractor and stuff like that. And I'm a sort of a broken record, which is it's not so dissimilar. You think it's a million miles away. It's not. Making a film, making a house, finishing something, restoring something.
Yeah.
Just the beginning, middle, end part of it. It's so tangible with building. But I do think you take all of that into your next project, even if the next project is creative.
Yeah. It's funny. I will admit something, though, which is that in the beginning, this notion of trying to perfect something was very important, and it's a trap, because this is a medium that's dictated by time and money, and compromise, because inevitably you're going to have to, your work won't be as good, or you won't have someone else's will in some way not live up to your expectations. And I think it's really about the struggle of creating it rather than some belief in the absolute perfection of the vision. In fact, it's a little bit about opening yourself to the creativity of other people and of the improvisation of things that happen, because it is a living thing. It's different than a house. It's made up of other people's intentions and their contributions. It is collaborative in a way that it's not just like a painter or a sculptor.
Well, let's talk about the process a little. I'll do a little name dropping. And I forgot to bring up Shakespeare in Love, which is another great film that is evergreen because it doesn't take place in 1986.
Yep.
I was talking to my friend Chris Morgan, who's a neighborhood guy where I live, and he does all those Fast and Furious movies and everything else. And he was telling me about how Bird Box on Netflix had such a crazy success, a totally unexpected success. And he had a director, it was a female director, but anyway, he was like a producer and he kept kind of going, hey, shouldn't we do it more like this? Because he was trying to do it a little more like Fast and Furious, and she had sort of a different take on it. And he just kept kind of going, don't we want to do this a little bigger and this a little more? And she's like, nah, I know what I'm doing. And then he went, she knew what she was doing. I'm glad she didn't listen to me, which you don't hear from many people, but it works oftentimes with successful people. He went, she knew better.
Right.
So how much and how do you do that when you're a producer versus a director? Because if you're a producer and you're just a producer and you've never directed, it's harder to sort of be a backseat driver, even though plenty of people have tried. But I mean, you have done a lot of directing or a lot of writing, whatever. Is it
sure?
Is it hard not to go put your stink on something?
Well, I think it's
that you smell.
There are two answers. One is, I think the best experience I ever had, at least the most successful, was with Steven Soderbergh. We did a movie called Traffic,
mm-hmm.
and it was very clear to me just the enormity of his talent, and yet I had been very involved in the creation of this piece of material, and I felt very invested. But I, very early in the process, I came to him. I said, "Look, let's make a deal. The deal is, I have certain cutting rights. I have certain, investment proprietary instinct in this. Here's the deal: you allow me to say anything that I feel to you about what you're doing, and then you do whatever the heck you want."
Mm-hmm.
And that's. It worked great because I had this notion that whether he listened or didn't, that I had at least been able to sort of express whatever my investment was. And then he was the artist, and there's only going to be really one person making a movie.
Was Traffic a film that you wrote?
No, Traffic is something that I developed as a producer with Steve Gagan, and then Steven Soderbergh came on because he had the rights to another TV series called Traffic, and we combined our projects.
I think it's I know people get pretty territorial, mm-hmm. and I hear a lot of stories about what goes on in the edit bay,
mm-hmm.
and how people get real territorial there.
Yeah,
and it just doesn't help the process. I'm not sure why so many people feel that way or have that as a default instinct. It's such a collaboration. And if anyone's idea is half a millimeter better than yours, then you should go with it. But it does seem like a problem that crops up.
Well, I mean, you're talking about ego, obviously. And, I've worked with the same editor since film school. And he and I have a kind of adage, which is that the film tells you. There's mm-hmm. your opinion and there's his opinion and then there's what you see. And it's been my experience that ultimately, even those who are finding fault with something can be convinced when they actually are confronted by a thing that works. And I've had a partnership with Marshall Herskovitz for longer than I care to admit. And our rule is that the person with the most passion about a particular subject rules. And you find that not everybody always has that same degree. And if they do, it's misplaced because you can't feel utterly right about every single thing. In fact, doubt is such an important part of it.
Well, my feeling is if you can remain in a sort of neutral or buoyant position so that when we do whatever we're going to do and then you see it, you can say, oh, that worked, mm-hmm. and that's better than my idea. We had it before. I think that's about all you can ask of somebody. Not that they're dug in and yeah. their arms are folded and they're already shaking their head before they even see what you're presenting them.
Yeah, well, there is your idea and my idea, and there is that thing that emerges, which is that third thing often, that you would not have come up with, nor I, had we not had even some of the conflictual stuff or even some of the batting around that yields it.
The movie Trial by Fire is written by Academy Award winner Jeffrey Fletcher from Precious, and it's adapted from New Yorker article, I should say. Tell us the theme, the story.
Well, it's a true story. David Grann, who's one of the great journalists of our day, won the Polk Award for writing it for The New Yorker. And it's the story of a man who is unjustly convicted of the murder death of his three children by arson. And it is, in fact, one of those stories that can be one of the very few that can be pointed to as having been incorrectly tried and convicted and then put to death.
Right. So I think as a society... I mean, this is as a society. You know, we're willing to lose X amount of people with traffic fatalities and X amount and natural disasters and things of that nature, various forms of crime. But us executing the wrong person as a society is very high on the list of things we don't want to do.
Right. Well, because it's deliberate, because it's this very conscious choice, which is to say, put this person to death, which is not an accident.
Right. And it's sort of the ultimate, as far as looking back on societies before us and some that are currently still in the league, the government killing their own is frowned upon.
Yeah.
It never really works out.
Yeah. And by the way, the minute that you give any government the license to do that, governments tend to take advantage, and that could be applied to any number of other things that the government has done. So the state, I think, needs to have a certain amount of parameters placed upon its power.
So in this particular true story, the dad was accused of setting the house on fire and killing the mm-hmm. three kids.
Mm-hmm.
What was it about the story? And sometimes the prosecutors just sort of take, crumbs and turn them into a wedding cake. Was it that sort of thing, or was there something else going on more nefarious?
Well, I'm not sure nefarious, but I think very larger even than the story, because this guy was disreputable in some way. He was he had had some trouble with the law. He was a metalhead. He was doing some drugs. And in the society of his moment and in that place, he was the other.
Mm-hmm.
He was frowned upon. And he was the thing that society, when something bad happens, points its finger at and says, oh, him, let's get rid of him, or let's assign blame to him. And I think he was the victim of that. I think that's a very important thing to shine a light on when it happens.
Well, think about what everyone does. You see a guy's mugshot, is accused of arson, is accused of rape, is accused of murder. You see the mugshot and you go, oh, yeah.
Right.
Come on. Look right. at him. He's got a mullet.
Exactly.
we all are sort of guilty of going, oh, look at that guy. I mean, you see a picture of Tab Hunter. You don't go, oh, come on. Yeah, he did it. But you see the picture of the guy.
That's right.
And you go, look at the car he drives. Look at his tattoos. Look at his haircut.
And it was also a case in which the death penalty was being also used to serve the politics of the end of this particular place at that time. I mean, Texas, even to this day, that serves a politician to present himself as being in favor and tough on crime.
But you have to prove that this guy set his own house on fire. And there seems like the forensic arson guys are pretty good at figuring out how that stuff works.
Well, you would think, but in fact, what is proven in this case as well is that it was all junk science. And mm-hmm. as a result of this particular case, all of the rules, not just in Texas, but across the country, have in fact been changed and have now gone into the modern age of sophisticated testing, because at the time it did not exist.
If this guy had access to Mark Garagus or the Dream Team or whoever you could buy for an attorney, would he have been free?
Well, I think it's really important to realize that it's easier. You have a better chance if you are rich and guilty than if you are poor and innocent.
Mm.
I think it is as much more about class, even. I mean, and a disproportionate number of those are people of color, because they are, in fact, you know, less privileged numerically. So it is very much about class. And that is the numbers, the death penalty. And it's been told me by people who've gotten off and by lawyers and by a lot of people that it's really about having the money to be represented properly.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the percentage of people who were put to death by the state that had rich families who could put guys on retainer, Johnny Cochran or whoever. Obviously, it sounds like 0% to me. I've never thought.
I've never tried to think of them. I suspect I could count them on one hand, if that.
Yeah, there was that Navy doctor who claimed like hippies.
Jeffrey McDonald?
Yeah. But I don't know if he was put to death or he's still in prison or died in prison.
I don't believe he was put to death.
That's a crazy story, too.
Like, yeah.
I'm never quite sure how that one played out. So for you, what is like a work day? I mean, you have to – no, I don't know. A stupid question. But what I mean is like you always have to have five projects, like sort of – like it's like you're like a bakery, right? And I've never used this analogy before.
I'm waiting for that one.
The big mixing bowl over here, and that's like turning, right?
Uh-huh.
And then over here, you got the guy like kneading it and putting in the stuff. And then over there, there's an oven, and there's stuff in the oven. Like you're taking stuff out of the oven while other stuff is going into the oven. Like,
I think you're describing somebody, you know, other than me, because I've always felt like I'm like the little tailor who you know, gets a job and still wants to try to make a little as a tailor on the side. It's always been very mom and pop and very hand to mouth.
Oh, I don't mean in scale. I just mean other projects in the dough form while this one's coming out of the oven.
Yeah, that's true. Because I would think that, I mean, I've made maybe 15 movies and several hundred hours of television, and I'm still convinced that the ones that haven't gotten made might even have been better, and there are as many of those that didn't find the light of day as those who did. And when you're living in with those odds, you've got to anticipate failure and heartbreak. And so you have to keep a couple things going.
What is the verdict on – I'm conflicted, because anyone in this business will have a bunch of ideas and or scripts or whatever. They could be – reality shows, it could be features, whatever it is, and they just, the time's not right, or it doesn't work, or it doesn't get picked up, but you love it, and you feel strongly about it, and feel committed to it. And there's always that person that just keeps flogging the same idea, and 10 years goes by, and nothing, and you go, give up the ghost, put it down, leave it alone, move on to your next project. And then you hear these stories about everyone passed on this until somebody.
I've had those too.
I mean,
Shakespeare in Love was 9 years.
Right.
Yeah, Legends of the Fall was 7.
So it'd be dumb to tell you to give it up after 5 years if there's a certain project you're into.
Yeah, it gets a little bit harder as you get a little bit older. But yeah, you know, I don't know. The problem with that is when you encounter somebody for whom that is the only thing, their investment is so disproportionately large that sometimes the amount of emotion that's attached to it is difficult to actually navigate.
Right. So you have to sort of be passionate about a project, but also be willing to let it go and go on to the next project, because it's sort of reality on reality's terms.
That's
right.
They're
telling you we're not making this times X amount of studios right now.
Yeah. I mean, I would say what you hope for is some sort of dispassionate passion or a zen.
Well, you want I think you want to be like a great emergency room doctor, which is like kids all shot up. You're going to work. You're going to be given the best triage you can, but you're not going to cry during it. You're going to care very much what happens.
You're saying a kind of passionate detachment, which is to say that you're going to do your best work every day, but you're not going to invest your whole self-esteem and your whole every bit of validation in the success or failure of that particular enterprise. You have to find that internally. Otherwise, you're just going to eat your liver.
Well, also, I mean, there's no such thing as putting a product out there in almost any form now and not finding out exactly what somebody thinks about it.
Yeah. Well, again and again.
Again and again. And it's like you're going to eat your liver, as you said, if you just want to swim in that mire.
And neither can you invest in its success or failure, because that's become such a crapshoot with the amount of things that are competing each with another thing for people's attention. It could be wonderful or better or your best work and still be lost.
Oh, don't I know it, brother.
Yeah.
All my greatest work.
There you go.
It's all lost. Trial by Fire. It's in theaters this Friday. That'll be May 17th. A very interesting story and a true story. And someone we know now was wrongfully put to death. Although, how do we know it without giving away too much of the movie?
Yeah. I guess I once had a professor who was quite wonderful who said that the best thing about tragedy, the reason we love it is because it's so restful.
Mm-hmm.
Because even knowing the end of something, that conforms to what we know about life, is that life leads only in one direction. And that doesn't stop us from admiring tragedy as the most moving and most important form.
See Trial by Fire and enjoy the pathos of the tragedy that is Trial by Fire. Again, this Friday, May 17th. Anything else coming up that you want to hit, or is more dough in the bowl?
Yeah, I've got that dough on my nose and all that flour flying around. No.
Yeah, in Hollywood, they don't think of that as flour. Edward Zwick, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for hanging out. Brea Improv tonight and tomorrow night. So check that out. And live shows everywhere. Check out Not Taco Bell material. Until next time, Adam Kroll for Dr. Michael Bruce and Gina Grad and Ball Brian saying mahalo.
Who's talking? Yeah, I'll kill you. I'll kill myself, then I'll kill you.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Check out the Ace Man and Adam Ray tonight in Brea at the Brea Improv for Adam Carolla is Unprepared. Two shows tonight, two shows tomorrow night. Tickets and info on all the live podcasts, Mandry events, books, movies, and more are online at adamcarolla.com. And stay tuned for AP News.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.